today. The inside story of Europe's vaccine disaster. On the 26th of December, the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, tweeted, "The COVID vaccine has been delivered to all EU countries." She added, "This is a touching moment of unity."
The vaccine is made available at the same time to all EU countries. And people will start taking the vaccine in Athens, in Rome, in Helsinki, in Sofia, you just name it.
But fast forward a few weeks, the EU has been slow to start vaccinating, with some countries yet to receive the quantity of jabs they've been expecting.
Open and then shut in just 4 days. This vaccination centre in a western suburb of Paris ran out of vaccines.
Another night of violent riots in the Netherlands. Hundreds of rioters taking to the streets across the country. It comes days after the government instituted a nighttime curfew starting at 9 p.m., designed to reduce social contact and the spread of the coronavirus.
It's the limited number of doses that don't allow us to go faster.
And then came an announcement from AstraZeneca, which set off a chain of events that no one could have predicted.
The European Union will take any action required to protect its citizens and rights.
The European Union is planning to introduce export controls on coronavirus vaccines produced within its borders.
Trade war no more. The EU wanted to prevent the potential risk of vaccines leaving Europe and had threatened to impose border checks between Ireland and Northern Ireland, which would have torn up the Northern Ireland Protocol. After outrage in Dublin, Belfast and London, the EU caved in.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, how the EU's vaccine effort turned into a crisis. Daniel Boffey, you're The Guardian's Brussels bureau chief. Obviously, things really kicked off over the weekend with this story, but I think to understand why, we need to go back a couple of weeks to the 22nd of January when AstraZeneca dropped a bombshell, essentially, on the EU. What did they say?
They informed the Commission that, unfortunately, because they have a production problem in their plant in Seneffe, which is about 25 miles south of Brussels, that the planned 100 to 120 million doses for the first quarter of this year for the European Union weren't all going to come. In fact, only 25% of those doses would be delivered. Then the Commission said, OK, well, look, it's going great guns over in the UK. And in our contract, it cites two factories in the UK as producers of vaccines for us as well. Can't we have some of that? And the response from AstraZeneca was no. I'm afraid that the UK signed a contract with us 3 months before you. They get first dibs. I'm afraid that's all we can do. And the European Commission simply wasn't willing to settle with that at all.
Why were AstraZeneca having these production problems? What was the issue?
It's all a bit vague. The chief executive of AstraZeneca did an interview early last week, and he said there was a filtering problem. Since then, the Belgian authorities have gone into the plant. I mean, this is how toxic it is to see if AstraZeneca is lying or not.
Really?
Yeah, then the officials went in and they've come out and said there is a production problem. They're talking about it being a lack of raw materials. So we're not sure. We have various accounts.
So how did the EU react to what AstraZeneca said?
Blind fury. EU officials were astonished, appalled, hopping mad. I physically saw some hopping madness. And they went public very quickly with it as well. So the EU Health Commissioner, a Cypriot lady, Stella Kyriakides, she did a press conference. And I mean, she was almost shaking. Her voice was slightly wobbly in response to AstraZeneca's suggestion that unfortunately they can't help by diverting doses from the UK to the European Union. She said, well, look, that might work in a butcher's shop. We've got a contract here. We expect you to live up to that contract.
Not being able to ensure manufacturing capacity is against the letter and the spirit of our agreement. We reject the logic of first come, first served. That may work at the neighbourhood butchers, but not in contracts.
It was very real, the anger, but I couldn't quite understand. They say they're convinced that they have a claim to the doses in the UK. But what some of the member states are slightly concerned about is the Commission has started talking about AstraZeneca having a moral duty to provide these doses for the UK to make up for the shortfall. Now, that doesn't sound like somebody who feels their contract is copper bottom. And there's some doubt. In the end, the AstraZeneca EU contract was published. and lawyers have different views.
What was the main heart of that argument, and how did AstraZeneca respond to it?
It all comes down, it seems, to whether the company has a straightforward commitment to produce the 400 million doses, which is the contracted amount, or, as AstraZeneca claims, that the contract is to make best efforts towards fulfilling the order. The company said, look, we explained to the EU at the time that they were late to signing this contract with us. In response, the commission was like, no, what are you talking about? Best efforts. We purely meant if the vaccine failed, then we admit that you wouldn't be able to sort us out with doses in that instance. But this isn't a fact that the vaccine's failed. You have vaccine. In fact, you have loads of vaccine. In fact, we hear you telling Boris Johnson that you'll be able to give him 2 million doses a week. So actually, look, contractually, we want the doses made in the UK, and contractually, you're obliged to do so. The company comes back and says, no, I'm sorry, that's simply not the case. So you're just going to have to accept it. That's just the way it is. And that's where we are.
Right. So the EU didn't get much joy with AstraZeneca. What did they do next?
Just 3 days after AstraZeneca had landed this bombshell, they started thinking, well, what are we going to do about this? How can we save the situation? And they started talking about an export authorization scheme. And that would force all the vaccine suppliers to disclose and to seek permission for any exports out of EU territory. Now, the reason why this was important was that the Commission suspected that there wasn't any such production problem in Belgium, that actually the UK had been benefiting from doses made in the EU and they'd been shipped over, to the point where the chief negotiator for the Commission in the contracts with all the suppliers, she went through the customs records. Unfortunately for her, she wasn't able to prove that doses that were due to the EU had gone to the UK, but she was very suspicious. So that's why they wanted this. And the authorization obviously gave them the opportunity, if they wanted, to block exports going from the EU to the UK. I mean, this was a concern to the British government immediately, because while AstraZeneca is the top contract for supplying the UK, some 100 million doses, we are also due some 40 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine, which is made in Belgium and Germany and elsewhere. And so any threat to that would be taken very seriously. So it immediately put Britain on a collision course with the EU. It was very political now. It was no longer about contractual disputes. It was a risk to the UK government.
You mentioned that the UK relies on the EU for supplies of other vaccines like Pfizer. They've had supply issues too, haven't they?
Yeah, this is part of why this is such a toxic issue, is that a couple of weeks ago, there were only two vaccine suppliers authorised by the EMA, the European Medicines Agency. That's Pfizer and Moderna. And both of those had already had production problems. And if the European Commission was already being criticised for a slow rollout of vaccine supplies, but they'd hoped that AstraZeneca was the knight coming over the horizon. And it was very much seen as the sort of workhorse vaccine for the European Union. It was the one that they were able to get around to member states easily because it can be kept at fridge temperature, and the Pfizer vaccine has to be at minus 70 degrees.
What you're saying then, Dan, is that the EU really needs this AstraZeneca vaccine, and this is why they've reacted so badly to that announcement.
They are getting a lot of complaints from people who desperately want vaccine. They are fed up to the high teeth with lockdowns. Not only are vaccines not being rolled out, but the rates of infection are extremely high in some member states, in Portugal and in Spain, for example. And even in countries such as Belgium, where things seem to be under control, but they're having sudden spikes and outbreaks, and the variants are a massive concern. In all of this, actually, each member state is now talking about border restrictions, just to add to the sense that the continent's just slightly falling apart over this.
The EU then has been slow to begin vaccinating and is now facing supply issues. But how did they approach procuring vaccines in the first place? As one block of 27 or as individual countries?
Four governments, they call themselves the Inclusive Alliance, the Italian government, the German government, French, and initially the UK, they were looking at vaccines relatively early, not at EU level, just those four governments. The UK pulled out of it. They were replaced by the Netherlands, who were in the transition period. We just left the European Union. The UK just wasn't in the right mindset for international cooperation with European Union partners. So those four countries went ahead, and they were quite early in recognising the Oxford University AstraZeneca vaccine as something that would work for them. And they did sign up a one-page terms, 300, 400 million doses agreement. It was a draft agreement. But there was a lot of frustration among the other EU member states, a lot of suspicion, actually. And the Belgian government being one of them, the health minister, Maggie de Blok, made it very clear that she was not happy with these four going ahead with AstraZeneca and saying, well, what about the rest of us? What happened was that the German government in particular suggested to the other three, let's hand this over to the commission for the common good. In the end, everyone's going to need to be vaccinated. Otherwise, this doesn't work anyway. We have free movement around the European Union, so everyone needs to be vaccinated at the same pace. So the commission was given the control. Now, the commission have extremely good officials, and they got to it straight away. But they had to persuade each of the 27 governments to put up money for a vaccine of which at this stage there was no guarantee it would work at all. And it took a lot of persuading. I interviewed one of the chief people involved on the Italian government on the vaccine strategy. And he was saying, oh, it was just extremely difficult. There's just a lot of resistance from countries which don't have a lot of cash, some of them, just simply saying, look, we don't want to hand over that money without any guarantees. There was also an issue of liability. While all this was going on, the pandemic was at its height. They were talking about liability. What happens if this vaccine actually turns out to be dangerous? The commission was very sure that they wanted to pin liability on the vaccine companies, not on the member state governments. And actually, that slowed down the process. So in the end, AstraZeneca and the commission only managed to sign their contracts 3 months after the UK in August.
I mean, are there also levels of hesitancy towards the vaccine in Europe? Is that part of this story too?
Traditionally, if you look at all the surveys in terms of the EU, the levels of anti-vax feeling is extraordinary. In France in particular, it's like a third of the population saying they wouldn't have the vaccination. So that fear that anti-vax sentiment could slow down EU rollout anyway has always been there, and governments have sort of answered to it all along the way. One of the reasons they say that they went through the European Medicines Agency route rather than doing national regulators is that the EMA route is the gold standard in terms of making sure a vaccine is going to work and it is safe. It was a slower authorization procedure.
So is the reason then that the EU has been so far behind the UK in this vaccine procurement because they had to operate as a bloc and because the regulators were slower, or were there other factors at play here too?
Yes, unfortunately, just the structure of it makes it slower. There were errors though, because if you look at how much money the UK government, as compared to the EU, put in because of risk money, that's money you put into pharmaceutical companies to upscale their production primarily, should their vaccine be successful, it was actually a little bit below the UK. So it was something like 1.8 billion by the UK, 1.7 billion euros by the EU. But the EU's got a much bigger population, 450 million versus 65 million or something for the UK. And if you look at the US, it's more like 9 billion was put into upscaling production facilities. So they could and should have put a lot more money up front, as the UK did, as the US did. And what's the issue we have now? It's that they don't have scaled up production. And when one plant breaks down or has an issue, then they don't have anywhere else to look. Just in the last few days, in fact, Ursula von der Leyen had meetings with all the vaccine suppliers, and the top agenda item was putting more money into plants to upscale production. They've learned their lesson, I suppose.
You've mentioned the amount the UK has invested in vaccine production, but are there other reasons that we have done so much better than the EU in getting people vaccinated?
I think the scientific base in the UK is second to none. And a lot of this is because of investment under the Blair government. Tony Blair was obsessed with science, and he believed that Britain's future was having the best scientists from around the world, actually, working in our top universities. And they invested. The Labour government really did invest. And it's much criticised these days by the Labour Party, but they went into public-private partnerships to try and increase their scientific know-how and capacity. And we are benefiting from that.
So when did the EU actually start vaccinating, Dan, and how has that been going?
So it's been very slow. So we're talking 2-3% of the EU adult population vaccinated so far. And in some places, Paris, Madrid, they've suspended their first jabs. And the German government has said they expect shortages for 10 weeks.
Gosh.
So it's been painful.
Okay. And then last week, Dan, things really began to heat up. Even before the EU approved the AstraZeneca vaccine on Friday, Germany came out and said that they would be limiting its use to under 65s because they say there isn't enough evidence that it works for older people. And then the French president, Emmanuel Macron, went even further, telling The Guardian last Friday the vaccine appeared to be quasi-ineffective on older people, although he acknowledged he had no figures or official information. Is any of this based in science, or is this just political posturing?
It's perfectly acceptable, I think, and not political at all for the German or the Italian regulator to say, we don't at the moment have the data for over 65. It's not unsafe, but we just don't have the data to prove it works as well as it does for those in younger age groups. So they're playing safe. In terms of Emmanuel Macron's comments, he went further, quasi-ineffective. It was just nonsense. We don't have the data to show that it is as effective for over 65, but we certainly don't have any data suggesting it's not. And we certainly don't have any data to show it's ineffective. In fact, the UK has now rolled out the vaccine. They've covered an awful lot of people over the age of 65. So there is fresh data coming in, and all the data is positive. That's why you had Boris Johnson saying, rest assured, I am confident that this vaccine is good for all age groups. So Macron, I think, was completely out of line. And I think their politics does come in. The very fact the European Union is crying betrayal for not having the AstraZeneca vaccine while saying it's ineffective for older age groups, it doesn't make any sense. Maybe the fact that AstraZeneca has been rolled out at such pace in the UK, they want to maybe tarnish that in some way. In fact, Clement Beaune, the French Europe minister, made similar comments. You know, he said the Brits are taking risks that the French government would not take and the French public would not tolerate. And I think that's completely irresponsible, and it is playing politics.
And now the European Commissioner, Ursula von der Leyen, has also accused the UK of compromising on vaccine safety. But there has been pushback on this from the UK side. Earlier this week, Professor Anthony Harmden, who sits on the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, said in response to Macron that, in his view, the politicians need to understand the science before they make utterances like that. I mean, this comment from Macron wasn't even the biggest story last Friday, though, was it? The row between the EU, AstraZeneca and the UK came to a head in an extraordinary way. Tell me how it all played out.
Yeah, I mean, it really did come out of nowhere. It was just extraordinary. So we had a press conference with the EU Health Commissioner, Stella Kyriakides, who was talking about how they had to have an export authorization system because they needed to monitor and potentially block vaccines leaving the European Union, because they had suspicions that some vaccine suppliers, AstraZeneca, had been sending doses intended for EU citizens to the UK, and they wanted to make sure that they got what they deserved. That was the mantra. So she did her press conference, and we had briefings from officials, and they did press releases. Strangely, they didn't actually at this point publish what is called the implementing regulation, which is the actual directive saying what's going to happen. That was published while all us journalists had our heads down writing stories. Fortunately, a sharp-eyed blogger had spotted that in paragraph 16, in order to make sure that Northern Ireland wasn't a back door for vaccine produced in the EU, leaving the EU to go to the UK, they would have to trigger something called Clause 16 of the Northern Ireland Protocol. I mean, all this legalese could get you a bit baffled. But basically, effectively, what they were going to do was create a vaccine border on the island of Ireland. I mean, the one thing we've been banging on for the last 4 years is how to avoid a hard border between Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. It's the issue that completely dominated the Brexit talks. And then at this point of panic, it would seem, over vaccines, the European Union, and seemingly without any consultation whatsoever, had actually implemented effectively a border on the island of Ireland in terms of vaccines.
Can you explain what is this clause and what was it supposed to be used for when it was agreed in the Brexit deal?
So Article 16 of the Northern Ireland Protocol gives either side the opportunity where there's severe danger of societal difficulties, that's the phraseology, to override parts of the withdrawal agreement. So it could be anything really, where there's such a crisis here that we're going to have to just basically ignore certain clauses of the withdrawal agreement. And legally, you're meant to notify the other side for a start. But what happened in this instance, it seems, having talked to officials, that they were looking at the whole, how this export authorization system would work. And then they spotted, oh, well, yeah, but look, there's a problem here. in Northern Ireland be a backdoor? Well, how can we solve that? Oh, well, under Article 16 of the Northern Ireland Protocol, we can actually create a vaccine border. So the Republic of Ireland would have to notify and potentially block doses travelling across the border. That's how it's told to me, is that they didn't see anything political in it, purely technical, and they had no idea of the trouble they were storing up for themselves. It seems because utterly baffling.
Yeah, because it's one thing to say, oh, this was technical, we found a solution to a problem, but it obviously ignores hundreds of years of history and, as you've mentioned, the huge debate that raged around the border during the Brexit negotiations. How did different countries, how did Northern Ireland, how did Ireland, how did the UK respond to this?
The very first person to call in the camera crews, almost unseemly haste, was Arlene Foster, the First Minister of Northern Ireland.
So it's an absolutely incredible act of hostility towards those of us in Northern Ireland. It was nothing to do with making sure that Northern Ireland was in a peaceful state, and all to do with the European Union's vaccine embarrassment and mismanagement.
And she described it as an act of hostility. She said the European Commission, at the very first moment they possibly could, had implemented a hard border on the island of Ireland. And she called on the UK government to wise up and sort this out. She was extremely angry, but also possibly saw this as an opportunity, because Arlene Foster has been banging on ever since the UK left the transition period about how trade between Northern Ireland and Great Britain was being horribly messed up by the withdrawal agreement, and that we should trigger Article 16 because it was causing societal difficulties. She'd been talking about this, and Boris Johnson, in fact, in the House of Commons, even threatened to trigger Article 16 over this. So it's in the background.
This is something that's been waved around a lot then as a threat.
Yeah, but it's like an empty threat. It was literally a few weeks after we finally got through the trade and security agreement. Then for the Commission to do it, but then not to notify the UK, and not even to mention it to Dublin, is such a cock-up. You have to think it's cock-up rather than conspiracy, because it's just completely mad. The Irish government was straight on the phone. The Taoiseach was on the phone to Ursula von der Leyen, making his deep unhappiness felt. Von der Leyen responded, I think, pretty much in shock. Certainly, she listened with a sympathetic ear to what the Taoiseach was saying. I think she did explain why they'd done it, but I think as soon as the complete political disaster of it was seen, I mean, we had Sinn Féin, the DUP, and the Archbishop of Canterbury all condemning the European Commission. I spoke to a European Commission official on the night and said, if when you got those three against you, roundly condemning you, you know you've made an epic screw up. So the Taoiseach and Ursula had this conversation. She had a conversation with Boris Johnson, consulted with her officials, probably just went, and then spoke to them both again and said, okay, we're backtracking. I mean, it's a complete mess, because it has opened up the whole Article 16 question. You know, the Commission were the first to do it on this madness. It's made Arlene Foster bang on about it even more. This question will stalk Boris Johnson forevermore. And yeah, it makes it more likely that he'll do it at some point, I suppose, which will just blow up the whole issue all over again.
Oh, you think because the EU have tried to do this, that it will give Boris Johnson more license to feel that he could trigger Article 16 for his own ends?
Completely. Completely. Article 16 was one of those things in a treaty which is not meant to be done. It's kind of the nuclear button. And they just pressed the nuclear button.
Coming up, the EU reaches a compromise, but at what cost? What agreement has now been reached?
The compromise is that the Republic of Ireland, well, all the member states, will have to monitor and record all exports of vaccine going into Northern Ireland. But there is no suggestion of triggering Article 16 in order to stop those exports. But it does slightly leave open the question of whether it could happen in the future. And certainly some of the statements from the Commission have been unapologetic about saying if we have any suspicion that AstraZeneca or anybody else is moving supplies through Northern Ireland in order to get into the UK, then we will act. I mean, the reality is this is all a bit academic. It's just simply not going to happen. I just can't imagine that AstraZeneca is going to be involved in some kind of dastardly plot to do in the European Union. But anyway, they have kept open the possibility, and this compromise has generally satisfied anybody. And it seems to me that the conversations since this row between Johnson and von der Leyen, both sides recognise they need to dial this down, that in reality, one side being fully vaccinated while the other side isn't is no good for anybody, because that's not the way virus works.
What is the relationship like now between AstraZeneca and the EU? What agreement have they reached?
So just in the last few days, AstraZeneca and Ursula von der Leyen have agreed that extra doses will be produced for the EU and deliveries will be a sort of week earlier. It's a bit unclear where these extra doses are coming from. Probably they're coming from India, which is the fifth plant in the contract. That wasn't necessarily where the EU necessarily wanted the doses to come from, just simply because it's slower getting it from India to the EU. But it's a slight improvement on what was currently going to happen. So they have, I think, something like 40 million doses in the first quarter rather than 31 million doses. It's something. I think relations are extremely difficult. They're talking up solutions, but these are kind of medium to long-term solutions. It takes 3 months, really, to get a vaccination plant working. In the short term, it's going to be very difficult, and there's just no way around it.
Will the UK's vaccine supply be at all affected by this agreement?
There is the potential for it to be affected. Both sides now say it won't. Pfizer is producing vaccine for the British public as well as the EU. Pfizer has had production problems. Would that mean that Pfizer would be forced to cut into the UK order and maybe stop the UK supply to make up for the shortfall in the EU order? That was the danger. Both the UK and the EU say they've had discussions and that's not going to happen. So the mood music certainly feels an awful lot better today around that. But there's a lot of pressure on the Commission and the member state governments to keep EU vaccine in the EU because of the shortages.
Dan, a compromise then has now been reached, but at what cost? How damaging will this episode be for the EU and for Ursula von der Leyen?
To be honest, I think they've made mistakes, but they've been unlucky, and this is incredibly difficult. Everyone is learning as they go along. The UK, this particular government, was extremely lucky that the Blair administration had pumped money into science and technological development and universities, Oxford University being one of them. Lucky that they had good relations with AstraZeneca, and lucky that that came off. So we're all at the moment ganging up on the European Commission and saying, oh, appalling. But you know, a lot of this is luck.
There is a narrative, though, that the UK has managed to do well with vaccines because of Brexit. Is there any truth to this? And what role has Brexit played in the events of the past few days?
I mean, if we were a member state, we would probably, let's be honest, have been part of the EU vaccination programme. There is an argument, given this isn't kind of nationalism and bravado about Britain, but it's just given that scientific excellence within the UK from people from all different nations, but the fact is there's a lot of expertise. Maybe it could have been handled in a better way, but we probably would have been involved. So Brexit has probably made it more likely that we're going to do it on our own. And certainly the terms on which the EU offered British involvement in the EU vaccination scheme, which would involve no say whatsoever in negotiations, not a place on the steering group alongside France and Germany, the rest of them, no possibility of side deals and stuff. The UK, reasonably, they could not get involved. Now, in terms of Britain doing better on its own, certainly it's been able to make decisions more quickly and it's invested more, you know, if you look at it comparatively in terms of risk money. But Germany could have done that as an EU member state and they decided not to on the basis of solidarity. And I do think it's only because Brexit, the counterfactual, that there is so much criticism of the EU side. So Brexit's there. It's the poison in the debate. It's what makes it also toxic. But it's not why Britain's done well. I mean, what's been a bit unpleasant about the vaccine story in the last few days is the UK, EU, two very rich entities, arguing about who's going to have the bigger part of the cake. And meanwhile, the whole continents are going without us at all. But unfortunately, that's where the debate is at the moment. It's pretty ugly, this sort of vaccine nationalism. Not particularly seemly.
Dan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Daniel Boffey. He's done some brilliant reporting on this story over the past week. Find it at theguardian.com. Today's episode was produced by Courtney Youssef, and sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.